Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the CHGO Cubs podcast presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook. Use code CHGO when you sign up. Hello, everyone. My name is Corey. I am joined, as always, by Brendan. We are coming to you on Friday, March 24th. Brendan.
Yes.
Under 1 week.
I know. I'm starting to get that itch, you know? Like this is the unsettling time, because you are excited about it, but at the same time, you're seeing some of the players and the final roster decisions, and it's like a mix of being a little bit anxious but a little bit excited too.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's just an interesting spot. Like I feel like you and I have done preseason episodes for several years now. The first chunk, we were always expecting the Cubs to be quite good and World Series contenders.
This is our eighth season.
Yeah,
doing this.
And we've also had, you know, a couple seasons in the past 2 years where we were very unsure and I think pretty pessimistic about, you know, what might be going on. And this one feels somewhere in the middle. Right? Like it definitely doesn't feel as, like last year going into the year, it was like, this team is not going to be very good, right? Like,
I kind of thought there was a chance.
Anything can happen, right? But like, all things considered, unless there's several miracles, this team is not going to be that good.
Well, I was hoping for a miracle.
You're a glutton for punishment. At the end of the day, we're all Cubs fans, so that's how it all ends up. But this year, you know, I think the expectations are pretty measured, and I think for a lot of people, still relatively low to obviously where we would like them to be for the Chicago Cubs, but better. Right. And I think there's certainly just a lot more curiosity with some of the guys that the Cubs have brought in, some of the guys that are coming up. I do like that at this point we're on a pretty similar schedule, you and I, when we get on the show, to like around when Hayden Wisniewski pitches. Yeah. So you and I are in a much
better mood. That was intentional.
Yeah. When we do these shows. And I think he in particular is a good reason, you know, why I think people are, at least compared to last year, a lot more intrigued and like interested, I think, in this team again, even if, albeit, the expectations are not at the height that we would like them to be and that they were, of course, several years ago.
Yeah, the expectations around Wisniewski, I feel as if they've been growing the past like 2 weeks. Like for you and me, maybe it was just me, but like they've never changed. Like he's always had this type of stuff. He was showcasing that psycho attitude all last season in September. Like, this is who he is. This is a potential frontline starter that understands what he needs to do to reach that potential. He knows he needs to get that fastball up a notch. He talked about it, but he has the underlying features to do it and is now being recognized. And it bodes well, I think, for the Cubs' future, but also just on their ability to recognize talent and also develop talent too.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think for me, I don't know that the expectation has changed, but I think you just sort of expect a young guy like him to, I don't know, maybe have some struggles in the spring, or just, you know, we came into the spring sort of having this debate about everybody's role and this and that and the other. Like, I've always seen the potential in him. That was clear the minute, really, honestly, the minute we started watching the tape when he got traded to New York or from New York for Scott Efros. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, when he makes his debut, it's like, oh, okay, like this is dazzling, right? But to watch him just dominating these spring games, I mean, filthy. And we mentioned this, you know, every time, like, you know, it's the, you've got the pitching ninja throwing up the, you know, vomit emoji for his slider every day, every time he goes out there on the mound. On Thursday, it was another five innings, five strikeouts. He gave up one unearned run. Like, he's just dominating every day. Yeah. And so I guess that was what I wasn't necessarily expecting, was him to show up in this spring in particular and just go out and basically demand the fifth spot in this
rotation. Are you surprised?
I mean, I guess inherently, if I'm saying I wasn't expecting it, yeah. But in terms of, like you have pointed out a lot, the stuff, his attitude, his demeanor, in that sense, not really. I think we maybe all should have just seen this coming. He wanted it, and he just seems like that kind of guy where he's like, I'm going to go get it. Like, I dare you not to start me in the, you know, first 5 days or whatever of the season.
I think how he ended last year was underappreciated. 33 innings, a K per nine of nine, a walk rate per nine under two, an ERA of 2.1, showcasing elite command in the 95th percentile of hitting the edges of the zone to go along with a slider that is also in like the 99th percentile of stuff with that attitude. Like, sometimes it's kind of hard to really express enthusiasm, but this is a really unique pitcher.
Yeah.
Not many teams have a guy who has the attitude, who has the dynamic secondary stuff, and has the ability to recognize how he needs to improve. And that's been one feature that I've learned more about Hayden this spring, listening to Ryan talk to the coaches about him, to Ryan talking with Hayden and the other guys. He is such a perfectionist and such a self-critical thinker that he, to me, it signifies that he has a legitimate chance to improve on those weaknesses. And the weakness probably is on that dominant four-seam fastball. But despite that, still has a cutter in the 95th percentile of stuff. His sinker, likewise, was in the 95th percentile of stuff. So is it really that big of a deal to not have a dominant four-seamer? Maybe not. But to go from like a below league average four-seamer to average, that could boost him up and to the top, you know, half of any team's rotation. That's a really big deal. And it just, like, one last point before we move on here, but this is why a lot of those stuff graders are so powerful, because guys like him, like Hayden, who have been underappreciated by scouts, by top prospect list for years, they come up and they showcase what they have, and it's objective. He is one of the better guys throwing a slider in Major League Baseball on the Cubs at this age. It's not a for sure thing. Never is it a for sure thing, but you have to be excited that for the first time in my Cubs fan life, having a prospect with that type of stuff is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unfamiliar.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Well, and it's just a lot of fun to watch. I mean, I think he's also one of those guys too, where you watch those breaking balls, if you watch any of the videos, like, I think even if you know, I'm not a scout, you're not a scout, even if you're someone that doesn't watch a lot of baseball, like, it's just the type of pitch where you go, oh, yeah, that seems really good. It's disgusting. It's like, look at how this is moving on the TV, right? Yeah. Like, it's just kind of like, on that simple level, it's like, yeah, this seems really nasty, even if I have no idea what I'm talking about. But I had a sort of, like, weird Cubs brain moment earlier today, because I think there was a quote from him. The guns usually in spring training in Arizona are a little hot, right? So I think they clocked him at 97 once, which maybe, but a lot of times these guns are a little hot. But even if he's like, you know, mid-90s a bunch, like as you were just talking, that's obviously a huge deal. But I think they asked him about touching 97, and he, I was just reading it in a tweet, and he said, yeah, I'm trying to be like Javi. And I was reading it, and my initial reaction was...
was Javi Baez.
Well, yeah, and I'm yeah. So I read the quote, and I'm like, how would that make him like Javi Baez? I'm like, wait, what does throwing 97 have to do with Javi Baez? And then I was like, oh, he meant Assad.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, well, we're still stuck in that era sometimes.
Took me,
you know?
It took me a real minute. I was like, wait, what am I not thinking of? Like, I know Javi Baez could do literally everything, but what does this have to do with him? Like, what does that mean?
Did he play on any important teams for the Cubs, Javi Baez?
Javier Baez, oh, yes. Yes. He was on the 2016 Chicago Cubs. He was actually the co-MVP of the NLCS that year with John Lester, number 34, the left-hander, your boy. Then the two of them with the Chicago Cubs went on to also win the World Series together.
Oh, that's yes. That's right. Why you're thinking
that's
the World
why
Series.
My
that's
brain
why.
Read that quote and was like,
it makes sense.
Javi Baez. Why are we talking about Javi Baez? Does Hayden Wisniewski even know of Javi Baez, you know, as far as their timelines with the Cubs not matching up? And then I was like, oh, no, he meant Javier Assad, who is currently on this team and through 97 and was hitting the upper 90s with
you
Mexico,
know he's interesting
baseball classic. Do you have
he's
thoughts on Javier Assad?
Yeah, well, I don't know if I was talking to you or someone else about this, but one of the guys at CubsCon, one of the pitchers, was asked by a fan, which pitch do you wish you had from someone else on the team? I forgot who it was. That pitcher said Javier Assad's fastball. Mm. And I remember hearing this, I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? He throws like 92, 93. So I sent Assad to like one of my friends who's a coach in the league. And I'm like, what am I missing here? He's like, I don't know. There's nothing really to miss. Like his fastball is kind of like, okay. I'm like, all right. Well, maybe it was just like a joke. Maybe it's true that Javi Assad, this markedly improved his fastball velocity and everyone knew about it. And everyone knows this is a big deal.
Yeah.
That's my theory.
All right. You know, very interesting.
So 97 every single start.
Yeah, I mean, a very interesting option for the Cubs, and you know, obviously performing that well on such a stage in the World Baseball Classic is certainly going to and has already had raised a lot of attention. So interesting to see what the Cubs do there. I since we're talking velocity, you and I have not spoken about this, and he did pitch in the game, the most recent game. If you're listening to this on Friday morning, you and I have not touched on Keegan Thompson. So Keegan Thompson pitches in the game on Thursday. Two scoreless innings with two strikeouts, no hits, no walks, no runs, nothing, right? But the velo has been down, and the Cubs have reportedly been working quite hard at that velo. In the first inning of work on Thursday, he threw just eight pitches, and I'm reading this information from Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic, and he says, seemed like just two fastballs, both registered at 92, couple cutters that Sahadev saw at 87, 88. He goes on to say still down, but this feels like a slight bit of progress. So I'm curious, you know, just your thoughts. We've kind of operated this whole time that Keegan was going to immediately be in this bullpen and have a multi-inning role and continue to be the kind of really quite useful and successful weapon in that role out of the bullpen, giving Ross a ton of flexibility in terms of how long he lets his starters go, how much he leans on some of the, you know, maybe shorter high leverage relievers. Now, this is an interesting one, right? Because if the velo has been down, I believe it was friend of the podcast, Greg Zumak, who had pointed out the other day that Keegan's fastball, the results when it was in the lower 90s versus the mid 90s was quite a bit different. He got hit a lot harder when he was not able to touch that upper end of his higher velocity. So I'm curious from your perspective, if you can just kind of articulate for us, how hard is that? How big of a deal is his velo being down right now? Are you concerned about that? Do you think that affects how the Cubs decide to break camp? Do they wait until he kind of gets that up? What are you thinking about this? And I guess, how do you square that all? Of course, it's just spring training, but look good today. Had a very nice outing today and hasn't given up a run in the spring.
Well, there's a sense of individuality when it comes to him and his velocity. In a vacuum, not good to have velocity dip. There's several explanations why that's happening, none of which are going to be made available to us. This has happened in the past for Keegan. Sahadev did talk about that, saying this has been a thing before. Of course, he returned his velocity back to the mid-90s. So it could be something that is just exclusive to Keegan. Now the question is, okay, despite that velocity dip, do you start him in at the big league level or put him in Iowa? Well, then the question is, okay, well, if Hadavi is working and Moskos is working with Keegan to improve that velocity, what is the likelihood that he can do the same in Iowa? Does it make more sense to let him work with the big league crew, the tech, the luxury of being in a big league clubhouse to amplify his velocity and do so in a faster way? That might be something they opt for, to keep him in the environment to get that velocity back up to par. In doing so, he just maybe doesn't pitch as often. He may pitch in lower leverage situations because of his velocity being lower, but this is something that's difficult to project. In a scenario where it's a short week and that's all you have to play games-wise and you need those wins, maybe you don't want to have Keegan be in that situation because the velocity is down, but because you have 150 games plus after the first week, it may make more sense just to think about leaving Keegan on the roster to accelerate the point at which he'll get that velocity back.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense.
I'm just going to default to what they want to do. Like, well, like, what are we, like, you know, it's like they have all the data. They know probably what's going on to some degree. Like,
I would hope they know.
I mean,
he's out there pitching, so clearly they're not concerned that he's dealing with anything physical or anything like that. And, you know, sometimes we see this in the spring. Some guys take longer to ramp up. They're, you know, not necessarily at their peak form where they want to be. It takes them a little longer. It's fine.
Didn't Lester have something like this years ago? I feel like maybe I'm just misremembering.
Well, John could pitch through anything, so it doesn't matter.
That's true.
I don't know. This sounds like a Hendrix thing. If any,
well,
if we're
don't say that. That's not encouraging.
No. I'm saying where we're looking at his velo in March and thinking, well, it needs, you know, 3-4 miles an hour to make everybody comfortable, and then he would get there, you know, by April or whatever. But I only ask that because
So that did happen. So sorry to interrupt you there. So 2015, Lester had a dead arm on March 20th. So like it's, you know, it happens.
The reason I didn't remember that is that was obviously his first spring as a Cub. I wasn't in love with him yet. You know, it took some time. So
only a few months later,
right?
You became.
But yeah, I just ask about Keegan in particular because obviously it's been a topic amongst, you know, Cubs writers and Cubs social media, and you know, there's been a lot of talk of the Cubs doing a lot of work and, you know, trying to get him back there. But it's, you know, also interesting as he goes out there on Thursday and throws 2 scoreless innings, still getting strikeouts, and again, has not given up a run in the spring. So obviously just want to get our pitch doctor's thoughts on one Keegan Thompson.
Yeah, I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, and I think either way, and this is similar to a few guys that the, you know, the Cubs have, you know, very different situations with, but I think, like you said, like, however they want to go about it to ultimately get Keegan to where he needs to be and to be that weapon for this team and for this bullpen, whenever, you know, however that pace goes is fine, right? Like sometimes not everything is going to be exactly where you want it to be, you know, on next Thursday when the Cubs are taking on the Brewers. And if it's a couple days, whatever, or if it happens next week before they leave Arizona, great. Right? Long as they get him there, and I'm confident that they will, it's okay.
It is weird, though. I'm not going to be like, oh, I'm not, you know, upset about it. It's a little irritating because you want to start out of the gate full throttle.
Yeah.
So, of course, like having Keegan take a step back is not a good situation. But in general, I'd be surprised if we're talking about this persisting 3 weeks from now. I think this is just like a ramp up issue. And it sounds as if that's what it will ultimately be. So I'm not concerned about it. I mean, other guys have not looked good either. I don't think Steele has looked that great. Command all over the place. So some guys, it just takes them a while to get going. All right, so quick break here from our first sponsor, DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook. Download the app and use promo code CHGO when you sign up. Right now, we have baseball starting, Corey, under a week to go. DraftKings is your app to bet those baseball games. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Also, an official sports betting partner of the NBA with code CHGO. You can bet the latter end of this NBA season, and playoffs will be starting up soon. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions do apply. See show notes for details. CHGO is supported by Goose Island Beer Company. It's been Chicago's beer since 1988. They have a deep beer roster. They have the Blackhawks Pale Ale. The Hawks and Goose Island have actually been neighbors for over 25 years. There's the Goose Pub in the UC that's been open for almost a decade. The Tap Room is a pregame destination for Hawks fans. They do a lot of charity work. They have been doing a lot of charity work for over 2 years now. They have other beers. They have the Bourbon County Stout, the Beer Hug IPA series, the Green Lion, the Matilda. They also have two locations that are open and ready to welcome you. You can grab a beer from their innovation tanks at the Goose Island Tap Room at 100 West Fulton, or you can get a smash burger and a fresh beer of the week at the original Clybourne Brewhouse at 1-800 North Clybourne. For reservations and pickup, go to gooseisland.com/locations, Goose Island Beer Company.
All right, Brendan, we do have some roster cuts that came in on Thursday. Obviously want to talk about those in some more detail. I think the notables, Nelson Velasquez, Matt Mervis,
David Bodie,
Cam Sanders, Nick Birdie, Manny Rodriguez, Brendan Little, yeah. Someone who, you know, had been interesting in the spring as a left-hander.
Great name.
Yeah, at this point, I haven't really been surprised by anything. Ben DeLuzio was also someone who was, when we started camp, maybe like kind of that depth utility type person that maybe the Cubs would have considered. I thought Nelson maybe had a chance, you know, when we started camp, especially if Seiya was missing time. The news on that continues to sort of just get better by the day, which is really great.
Which means I'm more nervous by the day, but okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
We would rather that, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. News sounds good. Sounds like he may not miss too much of April, which, again, is really just an amazing potential outcome. We're not there yet. He's got to continue to keep getting his work in, keep taking swings, keep waking up and feeling better, right? But just an amazing outcome for how scary that word oblique is when it, you know, first comes across your Twitter timeline. So that's great news. And maybe, you know, of course, if he's not going to miss as much time as they thought, that probably informs some of these moves. I guess, you know, I'll just ask you, you know, that was... I think the only people I did not mention, catcher Dom Nunez and Sergio Alcantara was the other one. Alcantara, who's on his eighth stint with the Cubs at this point. I can't even remember.
Great defense.
Great defense. Got a cannon.
Yeah.
Any surprises on this list? Any guys you were maybe hoping to see make the team? There's definitely some names on here I think we obviously have not seen the last of in 2023. I think there's going to be potentially some serious contributors in this group. I think obviously everybody has eyes on, you know, if and when Matt Mervis gets the call this year. You know, Nelson obviously had a little bit of a shot last year and I think, you know, showed some flashes and has that power. Cam Sanders, a really interesting and I think high potential bullpen arm. Manny Rodriguez, obviously the velo and the potential there. Nick Birdie was awfully interesting, I think, when you watched him in the spring. But your initial thoughts on this roster cut, which, you know, of course doesn't get us to 26, but we're getting there.
Yeah. The Nelson Velasquez send down is not surprising. I thought with Seiya's injury, maybe they might be aggressive and give Nelson some opportunities. The main reason I thought that was because I thought last season how they used him so much at the MLB level was unusual, given how they've operated with guys in years past. He didn't get consistent playing time last season, but he still got 200 plate appearances even through those struggles. So my thinking was they had confidence that he could work through those struggles and be a guy, because they gave him so many opportunities last year when otherwise they could have given him daily at-bats in Iowa. So that's a little weird now that he's probably going back to Iowa to start the season. Mm-hmm. I don't hate it. I guess I'm a little, I'm confused with Mike Tauchman, because it appears as if he'll be the guy on the roster. You would imagine so. Maybe not. Maybe they change their thinking, or maybe they have some type of different construction that we're not thinking of. But to me, it seems like it's Velasquez and Tauchman, and it seems as if they did not choose Velasquez. So I don't know. I don't know how I quite feel about it. It is great that Nelson will be getting everyday playing time in Iowa, but my hope is if he has success right away in Iowa, even in the first 2 weeks, call him up.
Right.
Give him that opportunity when Seiya's out. And sometimes that is a valuable experience. You adjust faster. The MLB environment is such a different exposure that can stimulate different adjustments. So my hope is they stay aggressive with Nelson. I understand the process. I just hope that he is a major contributor in some way pretty soon.
Yeah, I think at this point, you know, we're starting to get a clearer picture of, you know, some of the way that they're leaning on some of this stuff. Again, obviously, some of it's still in limbo. You know, we talked about, like, Keegan Thompson, right? Like, if they decide to let him get, you know, a little bit extra of a ramp up to start the season in extended spring or in the minors, like, that obviously opens a roster spot, but it opens a roster spot only from someone who is definitely going to be on the team for the rest of the season, right? So stuff like that we're not really sure of, but then you have somewhat of an idea of where they're leaning in some ways. And, you know, so like David Bodie going down, you brought up Mike Tauchman. You also look at like Zach McKinstry potentially having, you know, an inside track here, perhaps Miles Mastroboni. Do they go with one of those guys? You know, where, you know, we've had beat writers asking the question of Christopher Morel and where he's going. And now he seems to be trying to homer his way out of these discussions, right? Had a couple days this week in a row where he hit a home run. So he seems intent on at least trying his best to avoid a similar fate to Nelson Velasquez, right? Yeah, and it's just interesting, I guess. I didn't need David Bodie to make this team.
That expected woba.
Did you say my guy? Yeah. Oh, because of that. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yes. David Bodie has basically for years, when he's gotten regular playing time, been a leader on, you know, exit velocity boards and expected statistics, but it never translates. And I'm a believer in that stuff, but he was just one of those guys where I would always say to Brendan, like, look, man, it just isn't ever happening. I can't expect it anymore. So, it's not working for me.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, you know, and David Bodie, they outrighted off of the 40 man, right? And if you look at someone like McKinstry, he has no options. So in order to make that particular switch, right, you'd risk losing McKinstry. And I think the Cubs like the versatility, especially I think with some of the uncertainty at third base, maybe in the outfield, et cetera. You know, I don't know that, like, McKinstry excites me either, though, right? So I'm not surprised to see Bodie go down, and I especially roster maneuvering wise. But I am, you know, I really, what I'm getting at is I really want Christopher Morel to make this team. I brought up last time that I wouldn't be surprised if the team itself was concerned at the strikeout rate, but you just, you know, you see him hitting those home runs. You need the versatility, you need the athleticism. And I just hope they do that. And I bring that up with McKinstry because I, you know, sure, the versatility is nice and McKinstry has been highly thought of at times in his career, but, you know, the success just hasn't been there, and it hasn't been there this spring either.
I think it bodes well for Morrell to make the team given some of these cuts? I mean, there is a possibility that Nelson would have made the team and Morrell wouldn't if they wanted to lean heavy on outfield depth with Sia's injury. So we did learn that. We did learn the outfield depth, I guess, isn't as much of a concern that it might otherwise could have been if Sia's injury was serious. Maybe that's how I'm interpreting it. I don't know if that's right or not. But I still hold out confidence that Morrell's spot on the roster or playing time is not going to be held up by a struggling McKinstry.
Right.
It won't be held up. Even as weird as this sounds, Corey, like, I don't think it will be held up even by like Nick Madrigal. Like, there was a quote by David Ross saying that Madrigal's look good at third base, but he quoted, he's got to hit, end quote. Mm-hmm. So if Madrigal's not hitting, given Ross's urgency with younger guys, he goes in and out for better. I think for better. Some people don't like it. He goes in and out with giving guys, young guys, playing time, putting them in situations that seem aggressive, like Morrell's leadoff spot last year. I think that Morrell will be on the team. I think if there's an opportunity to be had, I think Ross will give him that opportunity right away. Mm-hmm. And I feel pretty good about it. I got to say, though, I understand the logic with McKinstry. He has not performed ever.
Right. Like, that's the issue.
And even this spring, he looks awful. Right. I know it's spring training, but he just looks awful out there.
That's sort of what I was getting at. Like, I understand the roster maneuvering, and I understand the versatility, the ability to play multiple positions, et cetera, but yeah, at some point you have to perform at the big league level, even if it were spring training, right? Like, I don't care about spring training. Dansby Swanson has, like, what, 3 hits? Like, I could...
Yeah, but he looks great doing
it. I could care less, right? But at some point when you haven't shown that at the MLB level in the time that you've been given, limited or otherwise, like, you know, a hot spring would have at least allowed people to say, okay, like, sure, give him a shot, right? Like, I also think the lineup on Thursday was interesting. You know, we've talked about a lot of this stuff. I don't think Ross has fully tipped his hand at how this will go, but I'm trying to pay attention to some of this stuff as much as I can. A couple things that I think were interesting, right? Hosmer at first, Trey Mancini at DH, Patrick Wisdom in right, and Edwin Rios at third base. And what I find, and maybe interesting is the wrong word, but... both Wisdom and Rios at this point are having really nice springs. And again, I feel like I could say this a million times. Like, spring training is spring training. It does not matter in a certain sense. It's 30-something at-bats right now for some of these guys. For Wisdom right now, it's 30. For Edwin Rios, it's 36, right? But as we've discussed, when you're trying to win a positional battle, or break camp with the team, or get a shot because you don't have any options left or something like that, it may be something that the front office and the coaches are using to evaluate and make these decisions. And I think when we look at how Ross is deploying these guys, it maybe starts to paint a little bit of a picture. Like, Edwin Rios, they brought over, you know, they brought him over on a major league contract. I believe it was written by some of the beat writers with the intention of him breaking camp and getting a shot on the opening day roster. He's got 4 homers. He's got a 944 OPS. Again, it's only 36 at-bats. I swear, if anybody tweets at me and says that I care about spring training numbers, I could not have qualified
well,
that.
Well, if you add up 30 and 36, is 66.
Right.
That's past a stable sample size for some metrics, you know?
But... yeah. So again, like, it's a small sample, but like, if that is something that they were toying with, you know, and if they were thinking, okay, you know, what do we do with Patrick Wisdom? Is he an everyday player? Do we want Nick Madrigal in there every day? Do we want Christopher Morrell in there every day? You know, Wisdom is out there playing whatever position they want him to play. He's being flexible. We can only judge it so in so much as, you know, these spring training games, but I don't think he's been a disaster in the outfield. And he's putting up good numbers. He looks good. He's been on this team for a few years now. He's going to get a shot at some playing time because he is playing well and he looks good, right? Rios, they brought over with a specific intention and he's playing well. I think he's going to get a shot. So I do kind of wonder if we see, at least until Saya's back, a decent amount of Patrick Wisdom and Wright and Edwin Rios getting a shot to, you know, show what he can do, at least in some of the time at third base.
I like that idea to start. I've said this a few times. In a perfect world, Morel owns in on that infield defense. The arm motion shortens up. The accuracy goes up as a result. That's not going to happen. It's not there. So realistically, Morel at third base on a majority of the game basis is not feasible. So then you look at the other options. You have Madrigal. I think the ceiling for Madrigal at third base is not high compared to what else they have to offer. I think a ceiling of Wisdom at third base, compare that with Rios against certain right-handers. You can look at the weighted on base average, sum them up, predict, and play the selective matchups, and it would be pretty high. I like the idea a lot. Both of them have that power. They both do well against certain pitch types. Wisdom does not do well against pitches up in the zone. Rios has a little bit more of an ability to get to those top pitches, so maybe even Rios will play against certain, let's say, left-handers if they decide to do that. I like the concept of those two at third base. Morel, you shift around, you play in the outfield, you maybe spell Bellinger in center field a few days, you may even put Wisdom right now in the short term, not the overwhelming long term, but in the short term in right field, put Morel at third base every now and then and go with it. But as it stands now, once Saya does come back, I like the idea of just playing up the power, having Rios and Wisdom at third base.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and obviously, you know, the way they're playing in the spring is certainly an ideal way for that to work out. I don't expect both of them to have an over 900 OPS, but that's what you would be hoping, right? Like they're just running into the ball and cranking homers, and you take whatever you can get on an average side or anything like that. And sort of the reason we kind of look at these spring numbers when you're talking about a positional battle, I wonder, Brendan, and I'm curious, like right now in 37 spring at-bats, Nick Madrigal's hitting .270 with a .622 OPS. So like to your point about David Ross, he's got a hit, right? Even if they're satisfied with the job that he's done at third base. Do you, like this is a different convert, like again, we don't have to care about spring training numbers, and we can acknowledge that for a lot of the guys, it really doesn't matter, and it's irrelevant. You throw it away when the season starts. But this is a different conversation, isn't it, if Nick Madrigal's hitting .320 with an 800 OPS right now?
Oh, man.
If they he looks good at third base, I'm just asking if you think that this is a situation where if that were the case, they're going to let him have first run at third base, or no?
I think it's so contextualized. I think maybe, like, we've seen Madrigal on the White Sox have well above league average offense. Like, it is within the realm of possibility for him. You know, I don't know the difference between like two or three bases and one extra home run is really going to push Ross forward to making that decision. But I think ultimately it doesn't.
I just kind of got the sense that they wanted that to be the case.
Yeah.
And well, if they could have like justified it and said, hey, he had a great spring, he was great at third base, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, but like I'm a believer in that these things work its way out. And even if he had like a 400 batting average in spring training, if he's not hitting in the first seven games, that all goes away,
that's
dude.
True.
You know? Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I mean, I think the first base situation is interesting as well. I mean, I told you before we got on, you know, if we're talking about small samples in spring training, like Eric Hosmer has not been good. And my prediction to you was that I think Eric Hosmer is the guy that I end up complaining about on this podcast more than anyone else. I'm just worried that they let that go too long.
It can't happen again. It cannot happen again.
But we've seen them
do
it a million times.
Yeah, but like how? Like you've got to learn, Corey.
Do they?
You've got to learn. I don't know. I hope so.
I don't know.
Like, there's no, man, I don't know, man. There's no incentive to keep him on the roster if he's not performing well, you know?
Right. Yeah, they're not paying him anything.
Yeah, here's what needs to happen. Mervis needs to go off. Like, it has to be so obvious that there's a discrepancy between Hosmer and Mervis.
Patrick Wisdom and Rios going hot, and you play one at third, one at first, and I mean, you move them around like when you
that.
Have to.
I like that. In a perfect world, like, here's the thing. Hosmer, the veteran leadership, all that stuff, like, he has a track record of being successful. I get it. But projecting him in this baseball environment does not seem the best. You know, in a perfect world, you do have Rios or Wisdom play first base. Morel gets time at third base. Nick Madrigal gets traded maybe for a pitcher, reliever. And that's what happens. Seiya comes back. He's completely healthy. Velasquez comes up. He makes those adjustments against, you know, heavy strikeout pitchers. Canario comes back healthy at some point. Ooh. And we don't ever talk about this ever again. And these, like, you know, fringe type discussions, these veteran late signings, like, I can't do this.
No, I know.
Like, I can't, I'm preemptively working myself off over Hosmer's plan.
The one thing I really want to see from David Ross this year as a managerial test is if he can kind of look back, because you know, man, that he loves, like, Hosmer's grit. Right? You know it. David Ross is just one of those guys.
Stop.
He's a gamer, that kind of thing, right? You know that David Ross loves that. I want him to look past it, right? Let's look at the toolsy young guys instead of, you know, I'm sure he calls him Haas, right? I haven't watched the interviews, but that must be what David Ross.
Attaboy Haas.
Yeah, David Ross has some funny, he's like a hockey player, honestly, like how he does nicknames.
Oh, yeah?
But yeah, anyway, that's just my prediction. I just feel like he's going to be smacking ground balls to the right side, and I'm going to get annoyed that it's gone on.
So he's going to be your Jason Hayward this year?
Maybe.
I mean, that's what it sounds like.
Jason, gritty, who veteran broke camp leader. In LA, so best of luck to him.
Did he break camp?
He did.
It must be that new swing.
He will be on the roster, yeah.
Look at that. Interesting. Mm-hmm. All right, quick break here from our sponsor, Game Time. Game Time is the hottest new ticketing site that makes it easier than ever to score the best deals on tickets to sports, concerts, and shows. If you have ever dreamed of sitting in a seat you never thought you could, like the 50-yard line, courtside, behind home plate, floor seats at a concert, it's possible with the Game Time app. The biggest last-minute price drops can be found on the seats you thought you could never buy. Won't find a better deal this season on Cubs games coming up in a week, Corey. They play the Brewers opening day. Game Time can be your app to find those last-minute tickets. This app is created by the fans for the fans. It guarantees the lowest price, and if you love CHGO, then you will love Game Time. The best way to support us is by buying your tickets through the link in the description. You can join over 15 million people who've downloaded the Game Time app and score the best seats to all your favorite events. Second break here from our sponsor, Foco. Chicago, you've already got the best coverage for your favorite team, so get fitted out in the best sports gear around. Foco has you covered from Soldier Field to the living room, north or south side, with hoodies, slippers, signs, bobbleheads, and everything in between. Get decked out like DeMar with apparel from the leader in sports merch and collectibles. Looking for the perfect gift for the football fan in your life? Foco has you covered with hoodies to fight that Lake Michigan breeze. Check out foco.com or click the link in the description below. For all non-presale items, use the code CHGO for 10% off.
And if you are going to get tickets to opening day next Thursday on Game Time, you can join the CHGO Cubs crew at the Country Club Bar on Clark. We will be having a pregame party, a live show. Luke, Cody, Ryan, myself will be there. Reserve your spot. The link will be in this episode description. You can also go and check out the link on the CHGO Cubs page. It's, you know, we've tweeted it, retweeted it, etc. That, of course, is presented by our friends at Goose Island. Again, that'll be at Country Club on Clark, just before the Cubs open the season against the Milwaukee Brewers. I will be there. Obviously, wow. I won't be able to stay the whole time. I got to get into beautiful, historic Wrigley Field. Oh, I got to get my hot dog, you know. So, priorities, right? Like,
I get it.
So, But yeah.
Do you know what you'll be wearing? Have you thought about that yet?
Well, so Brendan, it's going to be chilly. Yeah.
Is
so
it?
That
how cold
that,
are we talking
that
about?
Complicates things. Let me pull up the weather app here. Right now, we've got a high of 50.
Of 50?
Low of 37.
That's not that Thursday. Bad.
For now, right? But we need okay. to avoid the rain. Would be nice if we can get a little sun, keep the wind out of things.
Well, it can't rain on opening day. That can't happen to me.
Right. So last year was very cold, very chilly. It complicates things. I mean, I can put the jersey over some layers or whatever. I don't have the best Cubs like winter wear.
Yeah.
I do have. Well,
you have a beanie, don't you?
I have a beanie and I have a sweatshirt, yeah. Hoodie that is commemorative from the 2016 World Series that okay. the Chicago Cubs won.
They won, right? Yeah.
Not yeah. warm enough. So a lot of layers. That's all.
What
I'm
about
saying.
That beanie? What does that beanie say?
The same thing. The 2016 World Series champion okay. Chicago Cubs. Yeah.
That they won, right?
Yeah.
The World Series.
It's an
won.
Ensemble.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I have a new V-neck, no button Ernie Banks from the Cooperstown collection, I believe. Oh. Very nice. It was okay. a gift from my dad. So maybe break that out. Could always go with the John Lester. That one you don't like, though. It's the blue Walking Bear 34.
Yeah, I don't
Could
like
break
that
one.
But there's an exception because that, jersey's significant for a particular reason, so it's okay.
Yes, it also has yeah. a patch that says that the Chicago Cubs won the World Series. Bang, 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 ring the bell. That was like six of them in a moment.
I know. Well, people do forget.
Look, the problem is that's kind of why I was glad I got the Banks. I mean, look, I would proudly wear all of the jerseys I have. The problem, though, however,
you could.
Young Brendan, is that none of the jerseys I have are currently members of the Chicago Cubs. I have an Anthony Rizzo, I have a John Lester, and I have a Christopher Bryant. So,
have you thought about
weird vibes,
maybe who would be your next?
I don't know. No.
Yeah, I know. Drew Smiley.
Yeah. I can only get old left-handed pitchers.
Hey, it's your thing.
Right. Yeah. No, I don't think so. We'll see. I'll send you a okay. picture of my outfit next Thursday. We'll see what the vibes
head
are.
Head to toe. I want a picture of head to toe.
Right. But yeah. Anyway, getting back to the current Chicago Cubs, some other stuff to talk about. I want to talk about a couple pitchers with you. Firstly, I wanted to – any other thoughts on those minor league send-downs, anybody that you're particularly interested in? And I think you would talk to me a little bit about Nick Birdie and maybe being yeah. a little interested there. So just final thoughts on those 10 cuts?
Yeah, I mean, I said it before, but I just default to the pitching infrastructure. They know what they're doing. Birdie didn't have the stuff over other guys, and that's where I'll leave it at. The David Bode send down, not surprising, removed off the 40 man, definitely not a priority. He did have success, though, in spring. He's one of the guys that has been hitting quite well, like on par with like Trey Mancini and those hitters. So to your earlier point about spring stats may not matter, well, for Bode, it did not matter, right? So you can interpret that how you want in the context of other guys, but that's really all I got. The big one for me was the Velasquez one because I was just curious what they would do with him and Seiya's injury, sure. and we have our answer.
All right, so let's look at a couple of other notes. Obviously, I think the crew, Luke, Ryan, and Cody, touched on this just as another note. Marcus Stroman gets the nod on opening day. I think pretty expected. I had wondered a little bit if maybe Justin Steele could earn it, this is the right decision. I think it really was probably the only decision for Stroman to get that. And Jameson Taillon, 9 strikeouts in his last outing. He's rounding into form.
That sweeper.
I'm excited for him, man. Like he's just a solid pitcher. He's got such potential. And I think the Cubs got so many guys to step up last year for their rotation and, were such pleasant surprises, right? Like Adrian Sampson and the quality starts that he was throwing all the time. But I think it's exciting this year to, not only have the extreme potential of someone like Hayden Wisniewski and be so ridiculously excited about what he's going to develop into and how good he can be, but just the stability of someone like Jameson Taillon, right? You're getting a veteran like real honest to goodness starting pitcher, right? Like you hope you can count on him for 30 something starts. He's going to throw a lot of, you know, quality starts and go deep into games. It's just something that we were missing a lot. Like, how many times last year did you and I talk about the need for the pitchers to go deeper into games, right? Because it was killing the bullpen. It was just really making things difficult on David Ross and Tommy Hotovy and stuff. And like, Tyone is just, I think he's going to be a real anchor for this rotation. And, you know, I know you and Ryan have written and talked extensively about the sweeping slider that he's been working on and stuff like that. So I'm sure seeing him rack up 9 strikeouts, even if it is a spring game against a mixed lineup, is pretty exciting.
I mean, it's very exciting. You're seeing the results right before opening day. That's what you want to see. So the intent for him was always to get more whiffs with that new sweeping slider. We've talked a lot about the sweeping slider. I think people might be kind of like sick of it, but you're seeing some results. And the big thing with him is not so much of developing that pitch, but it's what they want that pitch to actually become. Like, the goal for his slider is so ambitious that if he reaches that goal, the slider is already would be in like the top, I think, 25% of the league. Like, his goal with that slider is to reach about 13 to 22 inches of horizontal break, but narrow that down to a range of like 14 to 16 inches. And the reason that's important is because that would be a huge improvement from last year when it was around 7 inches. So he would double that horizontal break. That would predict his whiff rate to improve by 3 percentage points. Doesn't seem significant, but that 3 percentage points goes from below league average to above league average. And if his command stays exactly as it was, with a 3% uptick in whiffs, that strikeout rate goes from below league average to predictably league average to slightly above league average. That ERA, the projection goes from around 4 to around 3.5. You think it's not maybe like that significant in and of itself, but you go basically from a guy who's being paid $17 million to, on the open market, would have received around $22 to $25 million. So that is really significant. And to see him have success and expressing comfort with the pitch so close to opening day should be exceptionally encouraging.
Yeah, man, I'm really looking forward to watching Tyone work, and again, just the stability. We've talked, you know, and again, like, I mean, we can get very carried away with what we think the potential is for someone like Hayden Wisniewski, but just in general, I think even if you look at like Stroman and Tyone as those top two guys, and you don't necessarily think, oh yeah, one of them is going to win the Cy Young, or they're going to outduel Justin Verlander, you know, for it's like that. No, you don't have to think that, but they're just stable guys, right? They are really good starting pitchers. Are they the best in the league? Probably not, right? Maybe they could be. They put it all together for a year or whatever, but they're stable and they're really good starting pitchers, and I think that's just nice to have at the top of this rotation. You think of the potential we saw from Justin Steele last year, how good Drew Smyly was in that second half, the potential of Hayden Wisniewski, the depth that they have behind that. I'm excited for this pitching staff. I really am. Two more things. You mentioned to me looking at Cody Bellinger's strikeout rate, which I think right now is at 17%.
Yeah.
And, you know, 754 OPS on the spring. He's hit a few home runs, looks healthy, you know, and again, I don't care about his spring numbers. He's an excellent defender, excellent base runner, etc. Why did this, even in only a 41 plate appearance sample here in the spring, why did the 17% K rate stand out to you?
Well, because he's striking out at that rate when he was at his best. So, in you know, his MVP year, of course, is going to be off the charts, but his strikeout rate was around 16%. 2020, the shortened season, around 17%. his struggles coincided with the inability to make contact. So he went from around 16-17% to 27-28%. We know the changes he was trying to make. You've seen it visually watching the at-bats. At least you see in spring, the whiffs aren't there. You talked about Morel strikeouts and that being a potential concern. Mm-hmm. Whether that's real or not, who knows? But you still want to see guys make changes and have some semblance of success, right? Does that carry over to opening day and the start of the season? Who knows, right? But you know that if Bellinger does make more contact as he's been doing in spring, then even when he was striking out under 20% and not hitting home runs, not hitting for a batting average as high in that shortened 2020 year, his weighted on base average was still 337 with a batting average of 240. So that's kind of maybe even that's optimistic, but you can see Bellinger reaching that type of potential, having a WOBA of 335, having good defense, and doing so because he made like maybe a marginal increase in contact rate. That's why it stuck out to me. I don't know if something to really grasp your teeth on, but I do think it's encouraging that at least in the short term here, he is making more contact.
Yeah, and it's a key way that he would be more successful. You know, obviously he's, at the same time, you look at that, you look at spring numbers, he's hitting under 200, whatever, right? But I think looking at that as a potential way for him to make that, we've talked about how valuable he would be if he were even just closer to a league average hitter, not an MVP level hitter, which he obviously has shown he has in him to do. But even if he were only closer to league average, he's an explosively valuable player with how good of a defender he is, with how good of a base runner he is. He's going to steal some more bases with these bigger bases as well. And if he can make that more contact, that would be one way for him to potentially get closer to that number. With his speed, his ability to run, obviously he's the type of guy, he puts the ball in play more. He has the potential to get more results. So obviously who he's facing in the spring, very different from, let's say Corbin Burns, on opening day at Wrigley Field, obviously, right? It's a much taller task to continue making contact against the peak arms of an MLB baseball team, but perhaps a trend to look at and something to be curious about if he can keep that going. Last thing, Brandon Hughes dealing with a knee injury and opening day in jeopardy. Your thoughts?
Yeah, unfortunate. He was one guy we were even talking about maybe getting shots to close out games. He was a consistent guy for the Cubs last year, over 60 innings pitched. He talked about early on in spring how he was excited about that and how the ramp-up period is a little bit different because he went through that 60-inning sample last season. So it is disappointing. His spot on the opening day roster is potentially jeopardized. They may want more depth. They may put him on the IL as a result. We already know Keegan's dealing with some issues. So it just sucks. Is it a significant injury? It doesn't appear as if it's significant, but you want the Cubs to be at 100% capacity because their margin for error is small and you want them to start off fast. So not having Brandon Hughes to start the season is disappointing. I think it is for a bullpen that needs stability despite that potential, losing Hughes early on does suck.
Yeah, absolutely. And, he just was so successful. Ross leaned on him so much in 2022. And, I think hopefully he can work through this and, again, be a significant contributor as players can do without doing so immediately on opening day. But you just don't want guys to be dealing with stuff. You want them to be healthy. You want them to be able to capitalize on all that work that they've put in, not only last year, but in the off season and building up and, just not have to deal with this stuff. And I think he showed so much potential to be a real star in that bullpen. And again, I think he'll still do that, but you just, never like to hear this stuff. Again, it's why I'm not a big, They didn't spend a lot of money on it, but, you know, I'm not a big, like, spend on the bullpen. I want to see these young arms. I want to see the Cubs continuing to develop this pipeline of their own arms and guys that have big-time velocity, et cetera. But I liked those, you know, the Fulmer, Boxberger bullpen additions for just this reason. It just gives them some stability, some guys that have this experience, and you have a little bit of time to deal with this stuff. And hopefully by the end of the year, you have Brandon Hughes and Keegan Thompson, and, you know, maybe like we talked about with the cuts, Cam Sanders throwing huge high leverage innings for the Chicago Cubs and blowing guys away. But at least start, you know, you can turn to these veterans and hopefully they can steady the ship just to get us out of this, you know, cold month of April and start the season and keep things stable, at least to start. And, you know, I don't think you need to necessarily be envisioning leaning on them completely for 162 games. But
yeah,
that's what we got, man. It'll be opening day by the time you hear from Brendan and I again. It's go time.
Let's go.
that's what I have. It's time to rip the Band-Aid off and get this thing started. Obviously, we have quite an interesting last week of spring training here. We definitely have still, I think, kind of a decent handful, Brendan, of unanswered questions of how this roster exactly looks. Who are those last few in, last few out? It's almost like you know, the CBS like bracket selection for March Madness, right? Like, who are those bubble players? Who are those last ones getting in? Who's just missing the cut? And, you know, what does that lineup look like on opening day? Who's getting the first nod at third base? Who's getting the first nod in right field? It's going to be interesting. And I'm looking forward to it. I think, you know, we all kind of have some measured expectations again for this team, which I think is fair and reason. Yeah, right. Exactly.
100 wins.
But you know, it's going to be fun, and I'm ready to get it going here. I do miss, you know, baseball daily in my life, and I again don't count spring training as filling that void. I need the 120 every day. I got to hear Pat welcome me to beautiful historic Wrigley Field. Alongside former Cub and All-Star Ron Coomer. Pat, of course, now a Hall of Famer. I hope he works that into his intro.
He's not going to work that in. He's too humble.
I know, but maybe Ron will, you know?
Yeah.
Something like
hopefully.
That. At least for opening day. Ham it up a little bit, Pat. You earned it. So I'm excited. I'm ready to get this going and have Chicago Cubs baseball back in our lives.
Yeah, I'm going to miss spring training. That's my take.
Because now you have to agonize over all of this. Yeah.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm ready to go. You know, it is nice. You get off during your work day, you come back, you watch a Cubs game at night. Hopefully it's a win. But, you know, the next day, you do the same thing again. Right. And there's something beautiful about that.
Yeah. So we are ready to get that going. As we said, check out the pregame event on Thursday if you're in the Chicago area planning on coming to the game. That link will be in the description of this podcast. Also on all CHGO Cubs social media, allchgo.com. You can reach out to one of us if you're interested. It is a free event. Would love to see you there, meet you, share a beer, etc. Get ready for the season. Brendan and I will talk to you again soon. And as always, go Cubs.